Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premiere Networks Saturday, July 18th, 2015. This is episode 1203. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TechGuy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, donuts with sprinkles, and smartphone. Wait a minute. No, I'll take the donuts part out. Smartphones and smartwatches. 8888-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536. A phone number. It's a call-in show, so it's really, it would be really much better if you would call. That would make a big difference to me. Thank you. And Heather Hammond, who's answering the phones, would actually continue to have a job, so that's important. 888-827-5536, toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can call via Skype if you're outside that area. I was traveling around in Germany for the 4th of July weekend. I was on a river cruise down the Rhine, and it was really surprising. We went to see in Cologne, Germany, the beautiful Cologne Cathedral, and I got back on the riverboat, and they said, "Somebody was here to see you." They were kind of surprised. I said, "What?" "He left his card." And it was a ham from Germany. So I don't have the QSL card here. I got to find it. But thank you. It was very sweet. And he said, "Welcome to Germany." Had a lovely time, but I'm back. And I guess, did anything happen while I was gone? Anything at all? Well, a lot to talk about. Apple Music came out halfway through my trip, and I'm in the middle of nowhere, but I managed to download iOS 8.3 and install Apple Music. And I tried to listen to Beats 1 for a while. What do you think? I'm very curious what you think. You know, Apple has put a lot of... What do they say? Put a lot of wood in the arrows. They've a lot of arrows in the quiver. This is important to them. Not only did they spend $3 billion to buy it, to buy Beats Music, and I don't think that was the headphone business they were buying. They were buying the streaming music thing. But then they made a big deal about it at the WWDC. They had a big announcement. This is important for them because Apple, which is the dominant retailer of music, more music sold on iTunes than anywhere else, sees this business shriveling, down 14% last year. It'll probably be at least down that much this year. Fewer and fewer people buying music, more and more people listening to streaming music. And Spotify, the big guy, and Pandora, those are the two big ones. Pandora has over 100 million listeners, subscribers, not paying. That's a smaller number. Spotify has 60 million users, probably monthly active users. That's usually the number they give. And then what was it, 25 million? Or no, it was 75 million active users, 25 million paying users. Those are the biggies in this. When Apple bought Beats Music, it only had 110,000 users. But Apple has really, they renamed it. It's $10 a month. It's just like everything else. It's the same roughly 30 million songs. And, you know, one nice thing, if you have Apple Music, you know, if you use iTunes and you have and music in your iTunes, you can play that back as well, which is nice. So it's both, it's your music player on your smartphone, but it's also streaming music. It does both. And that's, I like that feature. That's something Google does. Amazon does it, but Amazon doesn't have the big selection of streaming music yet. I think that's a nice feature. It's $10 a month. That's what everybody else is charging. They do have a family plan. That's kind of cool that you pay $15 a month for, I think, up to 6 family members. if I can convince my kids to switch from Spotify, maybe we'll do that. The big thing they made a big deal about, though, which was weird to me, because here I am on radio. You know, we've been doing, radio's been around for a while. We kind of, they did a radio station, Beats One. That's free. Anybody can listen to it. 24 hours, DJs in Los Angeles, New York, and London. Very hip, very with it. They hired the three best, internationally best-known DJs in the world. Their names escape me. Zach Lowe, I can't remember his name. The British guy for the BBC radio. And Juliette Anuga, I think she's in, is she in London? Anyway, I'm listening to it. It sounds just like a radio station. We have those. We've had those for a while. And there's only one of them. It's not like you could say, well, I'd like to listen to the classical music station now. No, this is it. The DJs are okay. They're like DJs. I wonder. I mean, it doesn't seem like that's a compelling offering. Let's put it this way. They've got to convince people to switch over. There's got to be something about Apple Music that's just the best. Not just the fact that, well, I have an iPhone, so it's the icons on there. I guess I'll use that. Is that enough? Microsoft learned a little lesson, I understand, while I was gone. The $7 billion write-off on Windows Phone. They're basically saying, yeah, the Nokia thing didn't work out so well. Oy. Although they say we're going to keep making Windows phones. We're just going to keep losing money? I'm not sure what the plan is. And then the story that I was watching with great interest and with some sadness, the dismantling of Reddit. Do you know what Reddit, you've certainly by now heard it in the news. Have you ever used it? It's basically, remember the old bulletin boards, the forums? So it was forums. It was created by two guys, Steve Huffman and Alexis Ohanian, both of whom I've interviewed, really nice guys, had a kind of utopian vision of a place where free speech ruled. People would be able to talk about anything, and then the good stuff would rise because you could vote it up. You know, had a little thumbs up or thumbs down. Unfortunately, there was kind of this underground there, this cesspool of stuff. And the problem is that Alexis and Steve sold it to Condé Nast, the big publisher. They do the New Yorker, they do Vanity Fair. I mean, this is a big publisher, and with a name to protect, and advertisers saying, you know, I wouldn't mind being on the subreddit for jokes. That's good. But I don't want to be on some of those nasty ones. And so they've been trying stuff. The problem is the community that created Reddit. This is an interesting, we live in interesting times. I can't think of any precedent for this. Twitter, Facebook, all the sites we love, Instagram, all the stuff comes from us. Not the companies. All they do is write the software that lets us put our pictures, our quotes, our funny jokes, on their stuff. But it's our content. We create the content, and then they sell against it. And it's kind of an unusual thing, isn't it? And people at Reddit are very upset because they said, well, Reddit is us. We made Reddit. You don't do anything. In fact, the software Reddit does is not such good. There's better stuff. It's not that good. But you created a place for us, and now you're saying, but you, not you, not you, and not you. On the other hand, I'm kind of sympathetic because the stuff they want to get rid of is really, truly horrible. But the people who run Reddit, the users, say, well, free speech. You said free speech. You can't do free. You can't take it. No takesies, backsies. So I don't know what to think about that. I feel like Rip Van Winkle. I've been gone for a couple of weeks, all of this stuff happens. You have to tell me what it means. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Give me a ring. Our website, techguylabs.com. Still there, right? Didn't go away while I was gone. No, it's still there. We put all the shows there, everything I say, links to articles, links to information. In fact, after the fact, we even put audio and video up there and your comments too. And, you know, just like Reddit, you can vote it up or vote it down. That's the only way it's like Reddit, I hope. I trust. We have great moderators keeping an eye on things. TechGuyLabs.com. Give me a ring. Let's talk about that and anything else on your mind, your problems. We're getting ready. 11 days till Windows 10 comes out. Are you excited? Are you all ready? Did you push the button? Did you say, okay, give it to me? I should check my Windows computer, see if it downloaded while I was gone. I don't think it did. Anything on your mind, if you want to talk tech, that's what I do. Call us. Heather Hammond will answer, and you will be on the air. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your call's next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK, Leo. Have you listened to Beats 1? Did you listen to Heather Hammond at all? Have you tried Beats 1? Because you're a young, hip person. You're up on all the musical trends. What did you think of it?
It was so-so.
I tried to listen several times. And I just, I guess I'm old. Well, I'm old. Let's face it. I'm too old for it. It's not for me. It's not for my people. Well, they're trying to get young people into it, right?
Okay. I guess I'm old, too.
It was a lot of dance, EDM, dance music, electronic dance music, a lot of that. A lot of, for some reason I kept hearing Julie Adenuga. We're here in the club. It's amazing. You're going to have a lovely time. Hey, shout out to my producer, Joe. And now here is another song that sounds exactly like the song you just heard. You're going to love it. And then they play it. And it's also European style. I remember the first time I heard music radio in France, I was shocked. Because as a DJ coming up in the biz, they taught you not to talk over the songs. You could, if you were really daring, talk over the intro. It's 58 degrees in the city. Another beautiful day. We're going to have our traffic cam in just a bit. But first, here's Elton John and Rocket Man. And then Elton starts singing, right? You time it just to the beginning of the song. These guys don't care. They talk all over the song in the middle. And now Juliette Tanuka back here. The club is rocking. It was the weirdest thing. And then, but I think it's also like hip hop stations and stuff like that. That the DJs on the hip hop stations in the States are more like DJs in a club. It's more like a club DJ, right? I don't understand it. I'm old. I'd love to know. What you think of it anyway. 8888-ASK-LEO. I'm sorry. Let's just take some calls, shall we? Did you hear me on the Nerdist podcast, by the way?
Oh, my gosh. I forgot to listen.
Okay.
I will do that.
It's kind of adult. Don't listen.
Oh, okay.
Not family friendly. Well, I'm trying to be hip with it, right? And, you know, Chris Hardwick, he's a great superstar, right? He's a big guy. He does, the Talking Dead show. He's on Comedy Central. He's got a late night show. And I'm a little starstruck. And he usually interviews big people, Paul McCartney. The guy he had before me was that guy, Joe Manganiello from Magic Mike XXL. You know, the good-looking guy from True Blood. Yeah.
Did they make you dance?
I just felt like I'm not really of that caliber. What am I doing here? So I perhaps tried a little hard to amuse. And anyway, you shouldn't listen to it.
I did pull it up, though, but it was before yours was posted. So I listened to a different one, but now I'm into it.
Yeah, it's up now.
Okay.
The Nerdist. I don't know. It's Nerdist Industries. I don't know what it is. I don't know how to get to it.
Just Nerdist on iTunes.
It was good for my street cred. My son texted me, said, dude.
Right.
Just heard you on the Nerdist. Whoa, dude. Good street cred for a dad.
Great.
Yeah. If I could do Joe Rogan next, I'm in.
You can ride that for a good 2 decades.
No, maybe 2 minutes. So what have you done for me lately, Dad? Can you tell me who I should talk to next? Because I see a lovely panoply of callers ready.
Sure.
Yes.
We got to get to Lewis in Hollywood.
Lewis in Hollywood. Thank you, Heather Hammond. Hello, Lewis. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Mr. President, welcome home.
Thank you, sir.
Leo, yesterday saw what...
I flew Nerd Force One.
Yesterday saw what might be unique in California history. Just for our friends in other parts of the country, Interstate 15's the major thoroughfare between Las Vegas and Southern California. And yesterday, a brush fire in the El Cajon Pass jumped the southbound lanes, resulting in a chain reaction of car and truck fires.
We got Hap Harper up here in the sky. Hap, what's going on down there on the 15?
Yeah. It was scary, and no one had ever seen anything like it.
Sounds terrifying.
Yeah, and fortunately no one was hurt. But one of the main stories to come out of this was that efforts by 3 firefighting agencies were stalled for 20 minutes by 4 or 5 privately owned drones.
Oh, no.
And you've been.
Oh, they're flying drones to get the story.
And they depend hugely on water drops by helicopters. They even have DC-10s that drop fire retardant. And they all were grounded for 20 minutes. And
I would have just flown over the drones and dropped it. What did they? Why did the drones ground them?
Well, they were flying above, you know, they were flying in the flight paths of the helicopters and the...
I guess there's a risk, isn't it? I mean,
they can't take a chance that a 15 or a 20-pound drone can bring down a helicopter.
That's horrible. So, that's exactly why the FAA has been looking into this, but they have yet to come up with a good solution.
Well, that's why I'm calling you. You've been dealing with technology and the law for a long, long time. What do you think the solution is? And this isn't the first time in California in the last month. This is the third or fourth time that drones have interfered with firefighting.
That's really awful. And you know what? It's an extension of the whole paparazzi thing, right? You can't, I mean, as you know, you live in L.A., you can't go down the street and there's a gaggle of photographers on motorcycles and mopeds and scooters running around, and it's hazardous. I think there's a good case to be made that that's what killed Princess Diana, is she was being chased by paparazzi. So this is nothing new. These drones are a new kind of technology. The FAA has looked into it. They've promulgated rules that say that commercial flight is illegal. There's all these rules, but they haven't regulated non-commercial, and there's a big problem in general anyway. The FAA has no enforcement arm. There's no FAA police, no Federal Aviation Administration police to come and arrest you. So in a drone, it's hard to even know who owns that drone. So one solution that's an interesting, remember the drone that landed in the White House in the middle of the night? Some drunk Defense Department worker was showing off his drone. Hey, man, watch this. And lost control of it, and it flew over the White House fence into the White House, which is, of course, terrifying. This guy was just a drunk, but what if, you know? And the company that made the drone, DJI, they make the Phantoms. They're one of the biggest companies. They have GPSs in their drones, and they have firmware. And their solution to this was to actually modify the firmware of the drone so it couldn't fly in Metro D.C. Now, I think there was a problem with it. I think they actually pulled it back. But that would be one, so sort of an electronic leash. But I don't know, but you don't know ahead of time that you need to block that area over I-15. So I think what we need to do is arm the populace with beanbag cannons or something. You can't shoot them with a gun because the bullet's going to go somewhere. But a beanbag, just to, you know, some beanbags, beanbag cannons. You shoot them at the drones. Can somebody get to work on that? Maybe we could start a Kickstarter or something. I don't know. Maybe, and somebody untoward in the chat room has a good idea. Mandatory transponders on the drones so you can identify the owner operator. That's a great idea. That I bet you that does happen. So at least you know who's doing it. And I think that would encourage responsibility. That's not a bad idea. I myself am not a risk for this. Every time I've flown a drone, it's flown into a bush or a tree or a wall, and that's it. Scott Wilkinson, home theater, coming up. Stay tuned. Bump de bump, must be time for Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru. Hello, Scott Wilkinson. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. How you doing, Scotty?
I'm doing good. I missed that music, man.
Bump de bump de bump, chonk de chonk. I don't even know why we play it for you, but there you have it.
I don't either, but it's real catchy.
So let's see. A bunch of movies came out in IMAX and 3D and so forth. I haven't seen any of them yet. Ant-Man's 3D, right?
It is. It is. I've just been in the chat room talking about it. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm definitely going to go do that. I did get an invite to go see Mission Impossible: Rogue Nation before it opens in theaters. So that's
it's interesting.
In Dolby Atmos.
Because originally, I mean, your podcast is called Home Theater Geeks, but really, a lot of what we talk about is movie theater, because that technology comes into the home eventually, right?
Exactly. What happens first in the commercial cinema generally eventually trickles down into the home theater. So I keep a close eye on that because it's very relevant.
Plus, you get to go to movies free. And that's,
well, yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
That too, exactly.
So what
Actually,
do you want?
I went and,
go ahead.
I was going to say, I went and saw Inside Out Pixar animation.
Yeah.
Very good movie. Highly recommended. That's all I want to say.
Animated stuff is better for 3D, isn't it? Because it's just...
Yes, yeah. It is. Although, interestingly, the one I saw was not in 3D because it was in this new Dolby Vision high dynamic range. And
whoa,
I was kind of surprised.
I see that.
It's really beautiful. It's really beautiful. But I was really surprised because Dolby Vision has a 3D capability. And they didn't show it. I actually saw it twice in Dolby Vision. And neither time, in neither theater, did they show it in 3D. So I was kind of interested. I didn't know why that was. But anyway, it's a wonderful movie. Highly recommended. If it's still around, if it's in your area, I highly recommend it. It's really good.
Good. What else?
So I really wanted to talk about the Value Electronics flat panel shootout. Remember, before you left,
that happened before I left, and I want to know.
No, it happened after you left.
Yeah,
but
who won?
We talked about it.
Who won? Who won?
The LG OLED.
Yay, OLED!
OLED, OLED, organic light emitting diode. It won, even though, and this was the most amazing part, we noticed a problem with it, and it's not only with. It wasn't a sample problem. It wasn't like, oh, well, you just got a defective one. We tried two different ones. The problem was that when you play a scene that has low brightness, it's a dark scene, you will see what's called vignetting, kind of darkening, ill-defined, but kind of bands on the sides of the screen. And LG was there, and they acknowledged the problem. They said, yes, we know this is a problem. We're working to fix it. But it was so obvious on certain scenes, and on bright scenes, it wasn't visible. So it doesn't happen all the time, but it happens enough. There are plenty of dark scenes in movies, right? I mean, that's not an uncommon thing.
That's a compression problem, isn't it? Or
no, we don't know what it is. There was actually an engineer from Korea who had flown in for this event.
I mean, I wouldn't necessarily blame the TV, or would you?
Yes, yes.
You have
it's
to,
absolutely
I guess.
The TV. Because right. Because we had four TVs lined up, all getting the same signal.
Hmm.
And this problem was not visible on any of the other TVs. LG acknowledged it. They said, yes, it's a problem. And the engineer who was there didn't speak very good English, but what we got from him was it's probably an electronics addressing issue. We thought, some people speculated, hey, it might be because it's curved.
Ugh.
Because
oh, man. If that's the case, that just makes me angry because there's no reason for curve except marketing.
Exactly. That's exactly
right.
Doesn't
add anything. And if it subtracts something, well, then that's really bad.
Really bad. No, but they assured us that it wasn't because of the curve. It was an electronics problem.
And it's not. Is it an OLED problem, I wonder? No.
I don't think so.
I don't see it
not
on
necessarily.
My Samsung OLED. For
no, instance. No. It's not endemic to OLED technology. I'm sure that's true.
Yeah.
It's but a lot of people report it. People who own the TV have reported it on ABS and elsewhere.
Well, I can't. Why did it win then? That's not good.
You know. No, well, this is a very interesting question. There is the crux of the matter. It won, we think, because it has such deep blacks. It
was what do you mean, we think? You were a voter.
No, I wasn't a voter.
Oh, you
I
weren't. Vote because, next year you get to.
Well, I was involved. I was presenting the thing, and so I felt it was inappropriate for me to actually vote.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I didn't actually vote.
You
but
recused
we,
yourself.
You know,
would you have voted for it?
I would not. I would not have voted
what
for
what would
it
you have voted for? Because I don't care about those other guys. What do you like?
It was a very close call between the Sony X940C and the Samsung JS9500.
Those are both LCD?
Both LCD. And the fourth competitor was a Panasonic CX850. And it had relatively high black levels, and we since discovered that we might have been able to jigger it so that it had better black levels. But we only got it the day before the shootout started. It's such a brand new TV that we didn't fully understand it, and that was a problem. And I apologize to Panasonic for that. Even if we had known it better and tweaked it to the nth degree, I think the results would have been the same. People just love that OLED black level, which is so infinitely deep, and the contrast is so makes the picture pop so much that they were willing to overlook this vertical edges vignetting problem. It was quite astonishing, actually. The other interesting thing, though, is that the scoring, when we finally got down to the scoring, it was a very close race. It wasn't that the OLED, you know, ran away with it. It was pretty darn close. And it even won among, we had 72 valid ballots from non-experts or non-professionals, and we had 5 ballots from people like calibrators and professional TV reviewers who came and voted. That was fine. And the LG OLED won among the non-experts and among the professionals as well. But in both cases, it was a very close race. We also asked the question on the ballot, which TV do you think is best, taking into account which picture parameters you think are most important to you? And they might be different from one person to another. And 33 people picked the LG, and mostly they cited the black levels and the contrast and so on. The experts did not. They said, if I was going to pick one, and this is where I come in as well, I would have answered this question the same. Two of them picked the Sony and two of them picked the Samsung, and one of them actually picked the LG. But I ended up deciding I preferred the Samsung slightly. But there was plenty of good reason to pick the Sony.
You know what? I'm going to tell you one takeaway here.
Okay.
That's three sets that could arguably be considered excellent.
Oh, absolutely.
And so the good news is the quality in general across the board of the premium brands is superb. And for most of us that aren't, you know, really looking carefully and trying, you know, that aren't experts, any of the main brands are going to be good, right?
Yes, this is an excellent takeaway from this whole experience. That's exactly correct.
It was, you know, in years past, there's been, you know, the Panasonic Vera head and shoulders above the rest. Not anymore.
Yep, that's exactly right. Now, once the OLED gets this problem fixed, I suspect it will be another runaway.
Yeah.
Like next year, if they get this problem fixed, the OLED will just take it.
Will
easily.
OLEDs go down in price?
I believe so, yes.
So more people are going to make them. This is not like just kind of another plasma. Well, it's kind of a dead end and LCDs win. And
I hope not. LG is the only company making them now. We all hope that Sony and Samsung and others get into it. They did, yeah.
Because that's the one I have.
I know, and it's great, I'm sure.
Scott Wilkinson, he's a home theater geek. Go to twit.tv/HTG to listen to his weekly podcast on all of this stuff. You can also catch his work at the AVS Forum, where he's editor-in-chief, and every week here on The Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy. More of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy, floating down the Cripple Creek. 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number. Pat is in El Segundo. Our next call. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Leo. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I'm a watercolor artist, relatively new to this, and a genealogist, and I'm ready to buy a new computer. I've always had Macs, so I'd like to buy a computer, a printer, a DVD player, so I can play my own, find my own pictures. And
do you want to, by any chance, do you want to draw on the computer?
I've never thought about that.
What if you could use a stylus and use a program that would allow you to choose different... You could have watercolor, but you could also have charcoal, pencil, ink, oils, acrylics. You draw, and when you draw with the stylus, you're drawing on the screen, not on a tablet separate from the screen, but right on the screen. My mom. Okay. The reason I asked this, my mom is also an artist, and she loves doing that. And it's not for everyone. Some people really want to feel the texture of the paper and hold the brush and really get into the materials. And I know a lot of artists, it's very physical almost. But then there are other artists who are very comfortable with stylus and tablet. And the effect is beautiful. I mean, you could choose the paper. You can choose every bit of it. The effect and the watercolor, you blend it just like the real deal. But it's all...
That would be fun.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. It's all bits. So for that, I would recommend, believe it or not, a Surface, a Microsoft Surface. This is a Windows machine, and I'm with you. I kind of prefer Macs. But Apple does not make a touchscreen like that. To do that on a Mac, you'd spend a lot of money on a Wacom Cintiq monitor, like thousands of dollars. So that's not practical. But on a lot of, I know, cartoonists and stuff who love using these Surface tablets, and they have pressure-sensitive screens, and you can draw on it. Now, I do have to say that Apple is, it's rumor, and it wouldn't be till this fall, to be doing an iPad Pro that would be very similar, would use a stylus, would have pressure sensitivity. That's one thing the iPad doesn't have right now. And that's important for real materials. Like when you press harder in watercolor, you know, you get a stronger stroke. You could do light, yes, little touch. You need to be able to do that on the screen as well. And the Surface can do that. I think the new Mac Pro will be able to do that, but we don't know until it comes out. It's an Apple Pro, iPad Pro, I should call it.
Well, it'll be about time for me to buy a new one by then.
Yeah, all right, good. All right. I would go take a look. It's funny. I was asked this yesterday. A mom wanted her daughter, who's in seventh grade, loves art, and she wanted to get her new computer. She had a clunky old computer. And I said, you know, you really should look at this Surface because you can use it to make a beautiful art. And then there are a lot of wonderful programs that will let you do real natural materials and so forth. And I think that's just really cool. And then you print it. And then you print it. And you've got a, and if you print it on nice paper, and you, it looks real.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, that's something to think about. The Surface, they make two of them. They make the Surface and the Surface Pro. The Surface 3 starts at $500, so it's pretty reasonable. Surface Pro is more Mac priced because you have to buy a keyboard and the stylus, and by the time you're done, it's about $1,300.
Okay.
So it's more expensive. But I think maybe for you it would be worth a try anyway to take a look at the Surface 3. If you could find a store, a Microsoft store, let's see, you're in El Segundo. Yeah, I think there's a Microsoft store in your area.
I'm sure there is.
Yeah, if you find one, you can go in and play with it a little bit. Other than that, you know, a Mac is great, but doesn't have pressure-sensitive, touch-sensitive screens. But certainly any, you know, a Mac, a Windows, they all do the same thing. They all print, for everything. It's this one thing that's a little different is this idea of a pressure-sensitive stylus and screen.
Okay. Well, if I stick with a Mac, what would I need to have on a notebook? What would I look for?
You know, Apple has really diversified, and now it's a little harder to talk about what's available. You've got the MacBook, which is $1,299. It's not cheap, but it's the lightest Mac they make. It's got a beautiful screen. It's 12 inches, so it's not...
Yeah, I don't like that one.
Okay,
I looked at that. I want something bigger.
Scratching it right off them. Now, they don't make anything 17 anymore. 15's the largest.
Right.
But a MacBook Pro 15-inch, that is it's a beautiful Retina display, very powerful machine. I think it's all you'd need for a long time. They can't recommend them more highly. Get 8 gigs of RAM. If you're going to do Photoshop, get 16.
Okay, yeah, okay.
Get a solid-state drive. I don't even know if they offer the old-style spinning drives, physical drives anymore. Solid-state drives are so much faster, and Apple's doubled the speeds again with the newest MacBook Pros. They're incredibly fast.
Okay.
And that makes a difference. You know, you think, oh, I should get the fastest processor. You know, the most of what we're doing now with a computer is the processor's waiting for us and for the hard drive. So a faster hard drive makes a big difference. Big difference. So get a solid state drive. You know, it doesn't have to be giant. They cost a little more because so the sizes tend to be smaller. 128 to 256 gigs is plenty.
128 to 256?
Yeah, you'll start at 128. You can go to 256. They even have a 512 gigabyte. But it gets progressively lots more expensive. So I think probably okay to do, say, 256. 8 gigs of RAM, 256 gig hard drive. The i5 processor is fine. You can get the kind of the middle line MacBook Pro, but get the 15-inch if you want a big screen, and that is gorgeous.
Okay. So now what about a printer? Because you had suggested to my husband earlier, a couple of years about the Epson Artisan, but they don't make that anymore.
No, so but they have the equivalent. They have the equivalent Wi-Fi printers. I have to say, Epson's a sponsor, so disclaimer. They're a sponsor because I kept recommending them. I love Epson printers. The Canon printers are also very good. You want a Wi-Fi printer so you don't have to physically connect to it. You can print anywhere the laptop is. And both Epson and Canon make excellent Wi-Fi inkjet printers. They're not very expensive. A lot of the companies now move to all-in-ones where the idea is you could fax, print, Xerox, copy, you know, all of that. And I don't, you know, if you really need an all-in-one, that's fine. It's nice to have a scanner built into the printer, frankly. For instance, okay. You might draw a beautiful watercolor and want to send it to your friends. Having a scanner that you can take the watercolor, scan it, and then email it is great. My mom does that all the time.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think Epson or Canon would be an excellent choice.
Okay. Then what about a DVD player so I can play my...
Well, if you're getting an Apple, you really only have one choice. They call it the Super Drive. It's an external DVD player that plugs into the USB port. It's $79. It works fine.
Okay. And then if I'm saving things now, should I save them to the thumb drive? Or you probably don't call it that by now. But...
No, they do. You should save it twice. You should save it to the internal disk and to the external drive. You don't want just one copy of anything. That's a good way to lose it.
Okay, because I have my backups that I do, too.
Yeah, good. So I'd save it to the internal drive. That's fastest. Here's what I do. You run out of space. For instance, I take a lot of pictures. I'm a big photo buff. And so I only keep this year's pictures on my laptop drive. When the year ends, I move that year's pictures to my backup and several backups in several different places and to the big drive on the desktop. But the laptop only has the current pictures because those are the ones I'm most likely to be working on. You'll have to do that with your art as well or whatever it is that you...
Yeah.
You archive stuff. You archive stuff. The thing to remember is one copy of anything's not a backup. You have to have at least two or you don't have a backup.
Okay.
And preferably one outside of the house, on, you know, in the cloud. It's easier and easier now. Cloud storage is so cheap, so affordable. You know,
Microsoft, I have that.
Everybody
too.
Does it. You know, of course, Apple does it with iCloud. Microsoft has OneDrive, Amazon, Google. Everybody has cloud storage. And, of course, our advertiser, Carbonite's a good choice, too.
Okay. And one last question.
Sure.
Which is a little close to this, is because I do genealogy, too. How do I copy old pictures without destroying the ink? I've heard that if I scan them, that will destroy the ink on old.
No, I don't think so. You don't want to put them in a feeder or a roller. You want to scan them on a glass plate, and you gently put it on the glass plate. Is it the light that people say is going to destroy it, or the physical?
I think so.
Yeah, I don't think it's that bright. I think you're all right.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You know, we were in the most beautiful museum in Budapest. And they say, go ahead, take pictures. Just don't use flash because the flash over time is going to, you know, hurt the picture, dim it or something. But you're doing this once. That's not going to do anything.
Okay.
Hey, thanks for the call. Enjoy your new... email me some watercolors. That sounds great. We're going to take a break. Come back. News at the top of the hour. Then more of your calls. 8888-ASK-LEO. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our Tech Guy podcast today brought to you by ZipRecruiter. If you're in the, I think, unenviable position of doing the hiring for your business, you ought to know about ZipRecruiter. I mean, I have to say, it's gotten easier because of all these great job boards, right? But which job board is right for the job you're posting? Where are the people you want putting their resumes? Where do you go? ZipRecruiter cuts through all of this. They solve it by making it possible to, with one click, to post to more than 100 job sites all at once, including all the social networks. It's so great. Craigslist and Twitter and Facebook. And they have also current resumes from 4 million applicants, and they'll do that matching instantly. So if you go right now to ZipRecruiter.com/techguy, you could try it for free, and you're going to immediately, you know, you're just going to start getting good applicants. Now, here's the great part. They don't email you. They don't call you. It all goes into the ZipRecruiter interface, so you don't have to be getting calls every 5 minutes. None of that. And the ZipRecruiter interface is designed to make it very easy to screen candidates, to pick the right candidate for you to hire fast. It is just great. And now 100-plus job sites. That's amazing. If you're hiring, you know that this is maybe the most important thing you do in business is get the right people. Do it right. Do it simple. Do it fast. ZipRecruiter.com/techguy. Over 400,000 businesses, including us. We use them too. Have used ZipRecruiter, and now you could try it for free. A free 4-day trial. Get that perfect candidate before they go to somebody else. ZipRecruiter.com/techguy. We thank them for their support of the Tech Guy podcast.
So so we've been talking on in the chat room about a number of things, one of which is overscan. Now, I think it was Lawn Dog who brought it up that in the old CRT days, there was this thing called overscan, which meant that the electron beams that made the picture actually started and ended outside of the actual active image area. And you had to go in with little screwdrivers and tweak things to change that. But that was because there was some data being sent along with the picture in what's called the vertical blanking interval. And you didn't want to see that on your screen. So the TV, the CRT, the tube was designed so that the scanning actually occurred a little bit outside the borders of the active image area. And so Lawn Dog asked if there's still, if that still exists in LCD TVs and OLED TVs and so on, because why would it need to be? It wouldn't need to be, but it still is there amazingly. And I always recommend just turn it off, go into the menu system, go to zero overscan, or different manufacturers have different names for it. The Pioneer Kuros used to call it dot by dot. The reason is that you do not want the TV to be overscanning because that involves some scaling. It involves the TV making up pixels in between the actual pixels in order to expand the image slightly beyond the edges of the active image area. And the reason they do it is because you might have seen this. If you're watching broadcast TV on satellite or cable, certain channels, you might very well see at the very top of the image little what looks like little digital code kind of up there, and we call that digital hash. And you want to, the overscan is there in order to sort of push that outside of the active image area, but at the expense of causing the image to look soft, to not be as sharp and crisp as it could be. So my recommendation, what I certainly do all the time and recommend to everybody else, is turn off overscan. If you see that digital hash on one channel or another, learn to live with it. It's not that big a deal. I think it's a much bigger deal to have a softer image. So that is why I recommend doing it that way. Hey, big sports fan is 35 years old. Maybe it's your birthday. Happy birthday. My mother just turned 90, so that was a kind of a big party we had. It was fun. Web7141 is asking for my email. It is scott@twit.tv. Couldn't be easier. So, yeah, by all means, please do drop me a line if you feel like it. And R. Chandra's making a good point. More like components age and go out of spec, so need to be trimmed after a few years. Again, in terms of analog, that's correct. That would be another reason to need to go in and tweak that. Digital components really don't. And since TVs nowadays are all digital, we don't have that problem anymore. Web7141, did I see the Minions movie? And the answer is no, I didn't. I kind of wanted to go see it, but the reviews were so bad that I kind of decided not to. I heard one review that said rarely has there been a movie about a secondary character, a sidekick, if you will, or a bunch of them, that was very good at all. And so it seemed to be a reasonable argument there. Big sports fan, it is big sports fan's birthday. Happy birthday, big sports fan. A big 3-5 today. Mike Heiss is in the chat room. Hey, Mike, good to see you. There must either be an imposter today or all the official Scott yellow shirts are in the washing machine. I like my red shirts too. Well, here... QWebIRC53088. Man, what a screen name. The minions suck big time. Okay. See, that may very well be. High tech. Yeah, old tube TVs emitted radiation. You could get a TV tan. This is, I suppose, one reason why your mother always said, don't sit too close to the TV. Now, of course, with Ultra HD, or often called 4K, the recommendation is to sit very close to the TV, much closer than people want to sit or feel comfortable sitting usually. But that's the only way you're going to see the benefit of all that extra resolution. If you sit back from a 60-inch TV 10 feet away, you're never going to see it. It's going to look like 1080p. You're not going to see the difference.
All right, Scotty, my friend. Time to
my
say
pleasure.
Ciao, baby.
Ciao, baby.
See you next week. Hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, you know, anything with a chip in it. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Or Canada. You can also reach me via Skype if you're outside that area. Let's go back to the phones, and Garth is on the line from Neenah, Wisconsin. Hi, Garth.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure. How you doing?
Well, I got a problem with my computer.
Uh-oh.
When I
you're not the first person to call with a problem with his computer.
When I first opened Internet Explorer or Chrome, the Internet Explorer opens up right away, but it may take up to 15, 20 minutes for a page to load.
That's not good. That's not good.
No, it's not. It drives me crazy.
Yeah. It's one of those things that it's 10 seconds, you could kind of put up with it. Then 20 seconds, 30 seconds. At some point, you got to do something about it, right?
Yeah, sometimes it'll come up right away. Most of the time, it doesn't.
Well, the first thing to do is to reset your browser. Clear the caches, clear cookies, clear everything. But most, and of course, that can speed it up, but that's a lot of slowdown. So I think there's something else going on. You probably have a browser toolbar or a hijacker that's running, and these things are essentially malware. They're not technically malware because you probably said yes to it in the process of installing something else. It happens a lot, unfortunately. And it is removable usually in the add remove programs. Anytime Windows is acting funky, the first thing I do is I go through the programs and features or add remove programs, depends on the version. What version of Windows are you using?
Windows 7, and I've had a geek look at my computer, and he's cleaned out all the malware and everything he can think of to take out of it. And I was just wondering if it could be the card in the machine, the desktop.
No. Nope, it's not hardware.
Okay.
Could be your internet, but have you tried Chrome or other browsers?
Yes, it does the same thing.
Oh, those do the same thing.
Doesn't make any difference what I use.
All right, well, there's one other thing to try. And the computer's otherwise normally speedy.
Yeah.
So
I work on it locally, it's no problem. Once in a while, I'm on the internet, and I try to change to a different website.
Same thing?
It could be the same thing.
All right.
There's nothing there.
So it's, okay, so I think I know what this is. So the process of surfing the web is a process kind of like making a phone call. You know the name of the website, yahoo.com. But the browser needs a number, not a name, like a phone number. It's the internet protocol address of yahoo.com. So what happens when you type yahoo.com into your browser, or you select a bookmark, or even just open the browser to your default page, the computer first checks to see if it knows where yahoo.com is. It caches that stuff so it remembers it. That's why it doesn't always fail. But if it doesn't know, it then asks your internet service provider. It's something called DNS, the domain name system. And this is the giant internet phone book. And then your internet service provider, if it doesn't know, will ask its provider and all the way up to the 13 root servers that are all over the world that have the official phone book. DNS problems are not unusual. A failure of DNS will do exactly what you're seeing, which is a long pause waiting for the phone number, finally gets it, then it goes to the site. And by the way, once it loads the site, you probably, as long as you're on the same site, it's fine, right?
Normally, yeah.
Yeah. It's when you go to a new site, and it has to get the new number, and if it doesn't know that number, same thing. So there's a few things.
Usually when I'm on my site, it's my email. If I try to go someplace else, normally it'll go there, no problem at all. It'll load up in a matter of 5-10 seconds, and I can browse around all I want to. But it's just usually it's just the initial startup.
Yeah, that sounds to me like a DNS problem. Who's your internet service provider?
Microsoft. AT&T.
AT&T.
Now my wife's got a laptop, and she has no problem at all.
And she's using it's unlikely that AT&T's DNS is so badly borked that you're going to get that kind of delay. Much more likely, the settings in your computer are screwed up, or your router is a little bit. Could be your router's a little bit screwed up. So there is, but that's what's going on.
Well, where's the router? All I've got is a DSL box from.
That's the router.
That's the router. Well, then why wouldn't my wife be having problems?
Well, that's why most likely it's your computer, right? Yeah, you asked exactly the right question. You're narrowing it down. It's most likely your computer's configuration. And I would point to the DNS configuration. You can use somebody else's DNS. There are public DNS servers. But that's usually something you do for instance, Comcast had this problem in my neck of the woods about a month ago. Their DNS server got broken, and all of us who were using Comcast, internet, the surfing was really slow. It was exactly what you're experiencing because their DNS server was unresponsive. So the fix for us was to use OpenDNS, which is you could try this. OpenDNS offers a free DNS server that you can use. You'll put in some numbers into your settings. But have that geek come back and particularly look at your internet configuration with especially your DNS settings, because that's almost certainly what it is. This is kind of complicated. It shouldn't go wrong, but it does with some frequency. You could call AT&T. Good luck. The problem really is that they don't make enough money from us to give us good support. If we were paying, it's our fault. If we were paying $200 a month for internet service, you could make a phone call and get somebody intelligent. But when you're paying $30 a month, that's one call. They can't afford to give you good support. So there's all sorts of issues going on. I presume you've rebooted the computer. There's something weird going on with your configuration, and it's a hard thing to fix from the phone. I can't really give you steps, but fortunately, it sounds like you have a geek, so he could look at that. OpenDNS.com. They just, while I was gone, they got sold, didn't they? Did Cisco buy them? I think that's all right. We'll have to watch with interest. But they were, for years, a service I highly recommend, opendns.com, where you use their DNS servers. And there's some benefits to that. And they're very fast, by the way. So if you're having trouble, it's most likely you're just misconfigured. And it is possible you could call the AT&T techs and say, walk me through the configuration. In fact, that's probably the first thing I do. Walk me through the configuration. I'm running Windows 7. Tell me so that I'm precisely rightly configured for you. Because you shouldn't take that long. It should take seconds, not minutes. Yeah, Cisco bought OpenDNS while I was gone. 8888 Ask Leo. The phone number, the website is techguylabs.com. We will put, as always, every question goes there, techguylabs.com. We break it down by day, hour, and question. So you can go to Garth's question. And if you have a thought or a comment, I'd love it if you'd put it in there. It's wide open. We use Reddit-style voting, so vote up the good stuff, vote down the bad stuff, and then presumably over time, better and better answers will always be there. My answer, but any comments you add to. TechGuyLabs.com, that's free. You don't have to sign up. Keep your email address. I don't want it. The other thing to look at, and chat room's reminding me of this, is true also, unfortunately, security software. And we all talk about it and how much you need it and so forth, but sometimes security software is overly aggressive and causes internet problems. So if you're running Norton or McAfee, take it off. Microsoft Security Essentials, it's free, runs on anything from Windows 7 on up, and it works great, and it's not intrusive. That could be another problem. take a look at your security software. Make sure that's not getting in the way. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Back to the phones. Greg is in Mission Viejo. Our next call. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm great. It's a pleasure to speak to you. I have often thought that I could do a whole show with just questions I have.
Well, good. Ask away. I'm ready.
Okay. My question today is, I'm an Apple fanboy, pretty much, but I do have a Windows 7 laptop that I use only for my financial things, Quicken, and I keep all my data on a TrueCrypt volume on that laptop.
Good man.
My question is, if I were to upgrade this to Windows 10, do you think that TrueCrypt program would work on Windows 10?
Oh, yeah. To my knowledge, there's no reason why it wouldn't. Now, as you know, the guys who wrote TrueCrypt, who were mysterious, anonymous fellows. TrueCrypt is an open, sort of open source, not exactly, it's not technically open source, encryption program. And I always say it's best to use encryption software that you can look at the source code, make sure that there's no backdoors in it. You know, the governments of pretty much all of the Western nations, including our own, want to put backdoors in encryption so that law enforcement can look at our stuff. TrueCrypt doesn't have that because we can look at it and verify it. In fact, it was recently audited, and it's well-written, reliable. But the guys who wrote it put a weird goodbye note on it about 6 months ago and said, we're done, see ya, and don't use it. They even put a version of TrueCrypt up, the next version, that breaks it. They said, no, you shouldn't be using this. Well, but we've looked at the source code. Not we. There was a crowdfunded project to audit TrueCrypt. Very smart people, much smarter than me, looked at it and said, no, it's good. There's nothing wrong with it. It's strong encryption. So I'm hoping it will continue to work with Windows 10. There are what we call forks of it. Many people have taken the code and rewritten it or updated it. They're taking out some of the things that the audit said. These aren't the best choices. They're not inherently a problem, but you could make better ones. And so they're trying to make better versions of TrueCrypt. I don't know if there's a winner in that regard yet. And there is always this issue of, well, who's making these and can we trust them, et cetera. So I would continue to use TrueCrypt until it stops working.
Okay.
But once it stops working, I wouldn't be completely worried about – I would use Microsoft's BitLocker, which is their own built-in drive encryption, much like TrueCrypt. Yeah, it's not open source. Almost certain that Microsoft, if they haven't already, will give backdoor keys to law enforcement. They don't have any choice. But it's not law enforcement you're worried about. It's just people getting your stuff.
Correct.
You know, and so I think that that's fine to use BitLocker. I use BitLocker and FileVault. That's Apple's solution, not TrueCrypt, just because it's easy. It's built in. You turn it on and you forget it.
So, yeah, that was my concern, is that one day, either after I upgraded to Windows 10 or just stayed with Windows 7, that I would fire it up one day and something would have gotten corrupted and I wouldn't be able to get in.
Well, you are, like Chris, this is a problem too. You back up, but you got to encrypt the backups.
Correct.
So I guess you have this problem, don't you?
Well, I do keep an unencrypted backup that I keep in a safe, but...
Okay. You know, that's a good idea. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
And at least that's safe. I think you're doing all the right things. I wouldn't rush to upgrade to Windows 10. Maybe that's the other side of this. If all you're doing is doing QuickBooks, stick with Windows 8.
Yeah, okay. I'm using 8.
Yeah. Just there's no urgency. Your free upgrade is good. You can do that anytime in the next year.
Uh-huh.
And once you do it, you can roll back to Windows 8 if you wish. You can download the ISO, register it of Windows 10, and keep it and install it later. So you don't have to run Windows 10 to take advantage of that upgrade offer.
Oh, okay. That kind of leads me to another question I just thought up that I've often wondered about. Maybe you can answer. When I download a program and it comes onto my, like my Mac, as a disk image,
mm-hmm.
Can I, before I open that and run it, can I burn that?
Yes.
To a CD.
Sure.
And then run it later from the CD?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You can, so it depends what it is. If it's the next, like Yosemite, the next version of iOS, there's a process. Inside the disk image, there's an installer. And there's a process for making a bootable. Is that your question? Can I make a bootable CD?
Yeah.
Yeah. You can only do that with OS X. If you're downloading Quicken, the DMG of Quicken, just burn it to the disk and you've got it.
Okay.
A DMG, when you open it, creates a volume, as you've probably noticed. It is, in effect, a freeze-dried volume. And opening it just mounts that volume on the computer. So it already is a volume. If you want to make a bootable disk, you have to do that with an operating system.
Okay.
And if you Google, you know, when you download Yosemite or whatever the newest version of OS X is, and you Google make a boot drive, I usually do thumb drives, but make a boot drive out of OS X Yosemite. There's steps. It's not complicated.
Okay.
You have to. There's some terminal commands you can use and so forth.
All right. Thank you very much, sir.
My pleasure. Great to talk to you. Thank you. Yeah. Look, encryption's great. Encryption protects us not only from people misusing our information, but from governments. You know, there was an interesting story as I'm traveling through Holland and Germany, Austria and Hungary on my vacation. I read an article, coincidentally, about this issue of, well, everybody says you've got nothing to fear. If it's just the government, if you're not doing anything wrong, you have nothing to fear. This guy said, well, in Holland for 300 years, they've been recording very carefully, because the Dutch are very precise, census records for every citizen in Holland. And among other things, they recorded their religions. No problem. You're not doing anything wrong. Until the Nazis came in and then had a registry of every living Jew in Holland. This is why you want to keep this stuff private. It's not that you're doing something wrong. It's yours. It's private. And it's okay. And it's not okay for a government to say, no, but we need to be able to get that. No, you don't. Sorry. Nice try. It's mine. It's private. And I feel completely, it is not yet illegal to encrypt your stuff. And you should do it with strong encryption that doesn't have government backdoors. And when the government suggests they put backdoors in these, you should say no. I'm not against law enforcement. I love it. Thank you for keeping us safe. But that doesn't mean you have the right to my private information. So it's okay to use encryption. In fact, I encourage you to do it. And I think you have some recent historical examples of why keeping your private stuff private is a good idea. You don't put your social security number on the internet. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. More to talk about. We'll go right back to the phones right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. Look who's here. Johnny Jett, our travel guru. Johnny, you look like you're in Connecticut.
No, I'm actually in Los Angeles.
I don't know how a person looks who's in Connecticut, but that's okay. He's in his home in Los Angeles, something very rare for this guy who spends hundreds and hundreds of days a year on the road. Great to see you again, John. We were just talking about river cruising because I just got back. You had been on a couple. You know, I've been on four. You've been everywhere, man. It's just so different from ocean cruising. I've done more than a dozen ocean cruises. I like the ocean.
What I love about the river cruising is you don't get seasick. It's flat.
It's flat, slow.
You're always close to shore.
You're always close to towns, unlike a cruise ship, which often has to park in kind of the bad side of town. Riverboats tend to park downtown.
Correct.
So that's nice. You can walk off the boat and many times just walk around, and it's really neat. So I like that. It's very relaxing.
Cell connection most of the time.
Yeah.
Self-service.
Yeah. And I had T-Mobile, so I was able to get at least edge service almost everywhere.
That's great.
And the ship's Wi-Fi is like any ship's Wi-Fi. It's okay if not everybody uses it. We were, you know, it's a 150-passenger boat. There were only 91 passengers on it.
That's shocking.
It was undersold.
But I think the reason why is because all these other river cruises have just increased capacity.
Yeah.
I mean, they all know that now it's, you know, because of Viking, they advertise so much on PBS, especially during Downton Abbey.
Right.
That everyone wants to do it.
Right.
So they've all increased it. The bad part is when you go into shore, now you're tied up with like three other boats.
It was crazy.
So you have no view.
And there's the town's jammed. It's like cruises were used to be, ocean cruises. This was the negative on ocean cruises. A 5,000 passenger boat pulls up. It's going to swamp a town. Well, it's not a 5,000 passenger boat, but if there's 20 of them, it might as well be.
I agree.
Anyway, I'm not complaining. I really had a good time, and I'm very relaxed. I feel like I've been gone for months. Seriously. Well,
I've been following you on Instagram, and your photos were amazing.
Thank you.
It made me jealous, and I'm glad that you had a great experience. I know that you loved Budapest, which I think is one of the most beautiful cities, especially
amazing.
Arriving at night is one of the top 10 things to do in travel, is standing up on the top deck.
If you haven't, I would say that made the whole cruise worth it. It was the very end of the cruise, and sailing through Budapest at night is an experience everyone should have. It's just incredible.
I would go off season, so you don't have to run into all these ships. Right when they start up in March or April, or do a Christmas cruise. I did that with my wife one time, and we loved it.
Well, and they go to all the towns, and the towns get all dressed up for Christmas, and it's so much fun. There's Lisa on. I'm showing pictures to Johnny. I don't know why. It's radio.
I love Budapest.
So we had so much fun. Budapest is a really interesting city. Hungary is a poor nation, but boy, goulash is the best thing I've ever had.
And the cold soup.
Yeah, so good. Anyway, do you have a travel tip for us?
I sure do. Actually,
enough about me.
About food,
what about you?
We're talking about food. There's a new app called AirGrub, AirGrub.
Okay.
So when I first wrote about it 2 weeks ago while you were away, it was only for San Francisco Airport, and now they've expanded to Boston as well, and they're going to keep expanding. So this is for people, and it's available, on iOS and in Google Play, and it's free. So what you do is if you're ever running late for your flight, or when you're landing, you don't want to wait in a long line and you want to get food for the taxi in, or more importantly, food on the plane, you just pay for it, order it in advance, and then you just roll right up to the counter and pick it up.
Awesome.
And you tell them your flight, so they know your flights, they know what time you want to pick it up.
And it's, I love it.
And so in San Francisco right now, they have, 3 weeks ago, they had three restaurants. They have Yankee Perry's and Napa Farms Market, which are all local, I believe.
It's kind of Uber for plane food,
sort of. Although they don't deliver it to you, which would be better.
That would be really great. Wow.
And so, if you go to their website, there's a tab at the top for coupons, and you get $4 off for your first purchase.
AirGrub. AirGrub.com, and it's Boston, Logan, and San Francisco right now, but soon more places.
Yeah, so since you live up in San Francisco, I would love for you to
test
it. I'm
going to do this. I fly out of SFO almost always, so I will
give
you an AirGrub review.
And I know that Napa Farms Market is a great restaurant. I don't know about Yankee Pear or Perry's. I think Perry's is a famous
Perry's
one, isn't
is it? Very famous, yeah. It's a hamburger joint downtown, and we're actually on Union Street. So, yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, that's one of the best things about, the airports these days, that they're improving the food.
Food used to be terrible. Still terrible on the planes, but at least you can eat something before you get on.
That's for sure.
Don't bring smelly food on an airplane, though. That's not a good thing to do.
Like McDonald's and stuff. When people open that up in the air, it does not smell good.
No.
Or tuna fish just bums me out.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe that's why airplane food's bad, is they don't want it to smell like anything. That might be. We flew KLM, which I really enjoyed. I really like them. It's the Dutch airline. It's Air France, I guess.
And the Amsterdam airport?
Yeah, Schiphol.
Oh, good.
So, AirGrub, do you have something else?
I do have a travel website of the week.
All right.
So, this one is, the website is, the it's the Customs Border Patrol's airport wait times. And their URL is awt.cbp.gov.
Oh, so it's official.
It is official. And this is all historical data, though. And they've been collecting it since 2008, since we're talking about government data. But what's good about this is, for travelers, before you're booking your trip, especially, those who are coming into America, you can see what the wait times are and the terminal for flying in and for the international for the Customs and Border Patrol.
So, like, how long it's going to take you to get through the airport?
Exactly, and I've talked about this before. Hopefully, if you're American or Canadian, you have Global Entry or Nexus, which, you know, you can just breeze through. And there, and we've also talked about an app called Mobile Passport.
They're doing something different at SFO. I'd never experienced this before. We got in. I think it's U.S. Citizens only. We went up to a screen, scanned the passport, give them some information. They print out a little paper ticket with your picture on it and your passport information. You still have to go to
an agent,
but it's quick.
Yeah, they don't have to type all the information in.
Right. It's much quicker. And the line, it was instant. You just go through. So this, I don't know if this is a
trial
project.
They're getting
better.
They're getting better. And I think that, was that the mobile passport? Did you have to download that? Because I think San Francisco is covered under this.
I didn't have to do anything. I just, when we got off the plane, they said, get in this line, you go in that line and you do it. And it's a kiosk. You still have to talk to an agent. Well, it ended up being 10 minutes to get through all of it.
Hey, 10 minutes is fine.
It's great.
It's when you hear the horror stories of, you know, hours or even 40 minutes, I think is ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, you should just be prepared. I mean, look, you're coming into a new country.
Yeah, but you know, there's no reason for America to not have the infrastructure to, you know, welcome not only return visitors but welcome visitors who are coming.
I have to say that's one nice thing about traveling in the EU. Once you're in the EU, it's all like one big country.
It's like,
so there's no passport controls. You just go travel freely.
But some of the countries that are not part of it, like Switzerland and the UK, you still have to go through.
Right. But in the past, going from Germany or Austria to Hungary might have been, you know, a tricky thing. But now, papers, please. Now you just go. You go. You don't. I'm on a boat. They didn't have to. I've been on boats where they stop the boat and they interview you and you go on. I mean, it can be much more complicated. It didn't have
to be. So how was the Wi-Fi, by the way, on the ship?
It was decent. We're planning another cruise at the end of the year. On the world's largest cruise ship, the Anthem of the Seas, and they have something called Voom Wi-Fi that they say is fast as home. So I want you to research this for me. We'll talk about this next time. JohnnyJet.com is his website. That's where you can sign up for his travel newsletter, get amazing travel deals for free. He also is on Twitter, @JohnnyJet, Instagram too. Johnny, we'll talk next week. Leo Laporte.
Have a great week.
The Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy. This isn't work. This is fun. I missed you guys. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Or you can use Skype if you're outside of those areas. Chuck in Tullahoma, Tennessee. Hello, Chuck.
Yeah. Howdy.
Howdy.
You caught me unexpected. I was listening to the other.
I'm sorry. I do that. I'm sorry. Let's go to Chuck. He's in Tennessee, little town called, am I saying it right, Tullahoma?
Yeah, you got it right. Not many people do.
I don't know why I know, but I know.
Oh, okay, yeah. Hey, I just had to restore my Windows 7 computer, and now I've got a problem partitioning the hard drive to have the same drive letters as I had on it before. Anything you can do to help there?
Well, Windows always wants to be on C.
Oh, it's not the through D. It gives me a problem. I've got for 10 or 15 years, I've been having E, F, G, and I, F, G, H, and I drive has always been certain items, and I want to put it back there.
That's sensible. And so the partitioner that's built into Windows won't let you say, I want this to be the iDrive?
Right.
Yeah.
I did it many. Last time I did this was back in XP days, and I did it with partition magic.
Yes.
Is there anything today that equivalent?
Yeah, but I'm not sure that specific feature. So I'm gonna have to rely on experience in our chat room on this, because it may not be the partitioners. It may be Windows doesn't let you do that anymore. I'm not sure. There are competitors that are excellent. Acronis, Acronis, makes an excellent partitioner.
Right.
Drive image. Or is that what it's called? True image, something like that. There are free ones, too. There's Clonezilla and others that let you do this. You boot a Linux disk and do it. But I'm wondering, somebody in the chat room, Archandra, who's usually very good on Windows things, says, you know, you can go into the disk manager and name these letters.
Oh, well, I have to look into that.
So I would do that. You know how you do that? You right-click on the my computer, select properties, and you'll see the computer management console, and you want to load that and then look at the – that's where the partitioner lives on Windows these days, disk manager.
One more comment.
Yeah, they're saying select the drive, right-click, change drive letter settings. You can set it to any letter you want. Okay. So that's all you need.
I can't afford free anymore.
Why not?
It costs too much. Every time I try free stuff, it takes me weeks to clean the computer out.
I know. Well, you know what? Free was always an illusion, wasn't it? At some point, you got to make money. You don't have a business. And what's happened now is a couple of things. One, you download software from CNETsDownload.com or Softpedia or some of these download services. They'll wrap it in a downloader, which then installs other things like the Ask toolbar. They ask you, but if you're not paying attention, they'd ask you kind of, you know, they're sneaky. They don't want you to say no. They make money on that. So that's, you're right. That's the free shareware. It's still best to get it from the original author if you can. They generally won't do that. But even Oracle with Java now, they're trying to make a little money on the side. So the installer tries to install a bunch of other stuff you don't want. I mean, you just be careful and say, no, 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 I don't want that. Uncheck the box. There's a program called Unchecky, uncheck with a Y, Unchecky, that supposedly does this for you. But I think the best thing to do is just pay attention when you install stuff. Then there's freemium. That's the big thing now in apps and games. You download a free app, like this new Fallout shelter. Everybody loves this, a hot game, Angry Birds, whatever. And then, but if you want to play the game, maybe you want to buy some donuts or coins or gold or rubies or something. And then you end up, I played The Simpsons Tapped Out, free game, lots of fun. I spent $300 on donuts in that game. That is not a free game. That is the most expensive game I ever bought. I'd so much prefer they just charge $60 like they do on an Xbox, and that's it. Even the console games now, they got downloadable content. You got the special heroic pack or whatever. What are you going to do? You just got to let the buyer beware. Our show today brought to you by something that is great for every consumer and something everybody ought to know about, Carbonite Online Backup. You've heard me talk about it. Are you backing up? Good. Good. If you're not using Carbonite, got to back up. Good. But here's the thing. You want a backup that's automatic so you don't have to think about it. You want a backup that's always running, not just on Sundays or whatever. You want it to, you change a document, you want it backed up. You want a backup, ideally. It's good to have local backups, but you got to have a backup that's not local, that's off-site, in case there's a fire or something, you know, some disaster, so your data's safe. And in business, this is 10 times more important. That's why Carbonite is so great. Automatic off-site backup, Mac or PC. You could try it free right now, carbonite.com. But do use my name, Leo, when you try it, whether you use the business or the home version, because that way you get 2 months free with purchase. It is a great solution. You've got to use it. Try it today for free and see. Carbonite.com. Just don't forget to use my name, Leo, for 2 free months with purchase. You got to back it up to get it back, so do it right. Carbonite. Jose is in Paramount, California, our next caller. Hi, Jose.
Hey, what's going on, Leo?
Not much. What you doing?
Getting off of a 12-hour shift.
Ay, 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 caramba. That's why I never complain about my job. I got it easy.
Don't worry.
3 hours and out.
Don't worry. I'm going back for another 12 tonight. It's worth it.
Oh, man. You're a hardworking fella.
I got to pay taxes anyway.
What can I do for you?
Well, my job requires me to be on the forklift a lot. And if you don't understand what you're driving on the road a lot and you pass out, so you need a little bit of music to get you through. And
yes, sir.
I made the mistake of losing my iPhone 5 earlier this year, and I had roughly $1,700 worth of music in there. Yeah, that was my big. That wasn't the first thing I said when I lost it.
Yeah. Well, now you okay? I'm going to tell you a secret. Apple says when you buy the music on iTunes, it was iTunes music.
Yeah.
Apple says when you buy the music on iTunes, now don't lose this. It's just like a CD. If you lose it, you lost it. Don't expect us to come save you. But you know what? They will.
Well, I purchased the Note 4. I know how you're a big fan of that particular phone. And I tried putting all my music in it, and all I could manage to put on my memory card was roughly 50 songs. Now, I was told by several people that iTunes and Google are like oil and water.
No. First of all, unless you bought these old iTunes songs, so I'm glad you had a backup. You lost the songs, but you have a backup.
Not necessarily. I mean, what I tried doing after that, and
I'm confused. I thought you lost your music.
I lost my phone.
And the music was on the phone, but you had another copy.
Well, no, I have my iTunes account. I still have it.
So you re-downloaded the music.
Well, no, I don't have an iTunes. I don't have an Apple device anymore. I have a Microsoft device.
I apologize for being confused. Do you have or do you not have your music?
I have roughly 50 songs out of the 1,700 that I have.
So what you want to do is put iTunes on your Do you have a computer?
Not on me at the moment. It's on my girlfriend's house.
Okay.
But I just purchased, and I hope that this finally solves my problem. I picked up a cheap iPad, like the first generation, for 32 gigs.
Okay.
And what I hope to do is just re-download everything onto the iPad and then just carry it in my job. Just stick it in a backpack and hope it doesn't fall.
So you can get your songs. You can get them off of the iPad or whatever device you put them on. They will play fine on your Galaxy Note 4 or any other device because Apple uses a standard form of music encoding called AAC that works everywhere. So your friend was wrong, but you do need iTunes to get that music because you're going to have to re-download it. And that's fine. You can re-download it. The only issue is if you had copy protection on it, but when you re-download it, there won't be any copy protection because Apple has left that behind. So if you're starting fresh, re-download those songs, get them on some sort of backup device because that's what you need to do. You got to always be backing this stuff up. I just talked about it. And then you could put it on your Note 4 or anything else. They're a standard format that will play just fine. AAC is actually the successor to MP3 from the same company, and it's widely supported. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, news next. More to come. Stay right here. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, smartphones, smartwatches, digital photography, home theater, anything like that. If it's got chip in it, we'll talk about it. 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. You know, it's amazing to me. Apple comes out with a new iPhone every year, right? Once a year. And they only do a big redesign every other year. And I think the stately pace of the iPhone... I mean, look, the iPhone is the king of the hill. At least in the U.S., there's nothing even close. It owns the market. But the stately pace of iPhone releases really kind of puts them in the back seat to companies like Samsung and others that are willing to release new phones every 5 minutes. And we've already heard that this month, Samsung is going to announce a new Galaxy S6. They're going to announce the Note 5. The rumor, they announced it last year in September at IFA, but the rumor is they're going to announce it this month, the Galaxy Note 5. New phones from a lot of manufacturers, the OnePlus One, which I liked so much last year, there's going to be a successor. It'll be the OnePlus 2. Motorola. I loved the Moto X. I thought that was a great phone 2 years ago. Had some battery issues, camera issues that just didn't make my, in the long run, didn't make my make my day. But I think in the short run, it was a really interesting, clean, simple, nice Android phone. Apparently, two new Motorola X's apparently coming out this month. This is all rumor mill stuff. Man, you just don't get time to sit down and take a breath, do you? On the trip, I brought my iPhone because I was AT&T and I was able to buy some extra, you know, foreign megabytes. Those foreign megabytes expensive. And then I took a T-Mobile phone, the Galaxy S6, because T-Mobile offers free international texting, inexpensive phone calls, 20 cents a minute phone calls, and unlimited free data, although it's slow. It's edge or maybe a little better sometimes, 3G. But it was usable, and that was nice to have that capability all the time. But I have to say the Galaxy S6, as much as I love the design, it's a beautiful phone. The best screen I've ever used. I would say the best camera on a phone I've ever used. It's Samsung has problems. There's something going on with their software. I don't know. It gets hot. It freezes a little bit. It's just not. And they've put out a couple of fixes. They're now at 5.1.1, Android 5.1.1. And it's still battery life's terrible. Disappointing. The LG G4, same thing. I've yet to see a great Android phone this year. I'm hoping. If HTC can't do it, if Samsung can't do it, maybe OnePlus or Motorola can do it. 8888 ask Leo, that's the phone number to the phones we go. Alan is on the line. Alan from Antioch. Hello, Alan.
Good afternoon, Leo.
How are you?
Hey, I have an iPhone 6 Plus, and I'm still running iOS 8.3. I haven't upgraded to 8.4 because I read somewhere that Bluetooth is disabled.
What?
You're using the Lightning connector with a car radio.
Yeah, that would, Why would you want Bluetooth?
Well, a little history. I have an aftermarket adapter for my car radio, CD change at iPhone.
Yeah.
It's working fine. I have my, I can change the channels. I can change selections on the music from the steering wheel controls. And I make a phone call using my Bluetooth headset.
Okay. I get it. So you're only connecting Lightning for purposes of charging.
For charging, and I do the audio when I'm listening to iHeartRadio, so I can listen to Leo.
Yeah.
You know, so it's both those functions and not just charging, but it apparently Bluetooth is disabled. Now it's working fine in 8.3.
That's interesting. And I'm looking at Apple's support communities talking about this exact issue. I think the thought was, this probably has to do with Apple's CarPlay capability, the idea that once you connect the Lightning cable on a car that's properly enabled, the iPhone then becomes the entertainment center for the car, and the iPhone display even is shown up on the screen in the car and so forth.
Yeah, well, that would be great. I just can't afford to buy a new
car. Yeah, you have to buy a new car to do it. I am not, this is something new. I hadn't, you know, the i8.4 came out while I was overseas. And I have updated, but I haven't tried it in all circumstances. I haven't seen this. So even if you just connected it for power, it would do this?
That I didn't read. And like I say, I haven't upgraded because I don't want to upgrade and then have to go turn around and back downgrade.
Which is hard to do. Yeah, they may not even let you. That's traditionally not something you can do. I don't know about this, and I will just have to investigate for you, or maybe somebody in the chat room will have something to say about it. But
okay, fantastic.
That's something to be aware of. And you know, if that's the case, yeah, don't upgrade. 8.4 yeah. Really does mostly one thing, which is to add Apple Music, the new music. Yeah,
and it breaks other things.
Yeah, I mean there are fixes, there are security fixes, there are updates in it. Some are important, but nothing that you could live that you couldn't live without until 8.4 or 5 comes out, rather. And that'll be out soon. That's going to be the Apple Watch update.
Well, isn't 9 coming out?
And 9's in the fall. Yeah.
Okay.
Apple may not come out with phones very often, but they come out with iOS updates all the time. So I think there is a public beta of 9. I don't know. You should look into whether that has the same problem or not.
Okay.
I don't know if it does, and I'm going to have to do some research on this particular problem. That's an unusual kind of confluence of things. I think the presumption is if you connected a Lightning cable for anything more than charging, that maybe you're using CarPlay, so we want to disable Bluetooth. I don't know why they would do that. That makes no sense. That sounds like a bug.
I'm just wondering, there's been a lot of aftermarket radios that have a USB connector to Lightning, so you could play your music and so forth. But if it didn't have a speaker, I mean a microphone, then you can't talk to Siri, you can't do phone calls.
Right. Don't know. I don't know. This is okay. News to me. I will ask. You know, we do a show called Mac Break Weekly and iOS Today. I have lots of experts, so I will ask the experts and see what the solution is. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Somebody's telling me don't rush to iOS 9, even though you could. There's a public beta. They say it's buggy and it causes app incompatibility issues, so might be worth staying with 8.3. Just stay. Don't feel bad that you're not using 8.4, unless you wanted Apple Music. And frankly, don't feel bad if you can't use Apple Music. It's not impressive. It's just an also-ran. It's, yes, like Spotify, or it's just another music solution, streaming music solution. 8.4 did fix, as somebody in the chat room, Web2347, is pointing out, that really terrible bug where somebody could send you a text message, an iMessages message that would crash iMessages. They finally fixed that. Nice. Only took them 2 months. You know, I haven't had any problems with 8.4. I upgraded all my iOS devices as soon as I could, but I don't do that particular thing. Brian, Lancaster, California or Georgia? California. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
We'll get started. Have to take a break in about 30 seconds, but we'll come back after the break. What can I do for you?
Hi. I really love your show. I listen to you all the time, and welcome back. Glad to hear you had a good time.
Oh, yeah.
Leo, real quick, I bought a brand new MacBook Pro. It's my first Mac I've ever had. And I've used Windows before.
Yeah.
Don't have a external hard drive yet to do any backup. But before I start loading it up with different apps and stuff like that, I want to know if there's something similar to the Mac as to Windows, like a system restore point.
Ah, all right. Yeah, so we'll talk about that when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, restoring your Mac next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. We were talking to Brian in Lancaster, California. He's got his first Macintosh. And as this is always the culture clash that happens when you go from Windows to Mac or Mac to Windows, is you look for the features on the old system on the new system. And what you're looking for is system restore points, something that's unique to Windows. Apple does not have anything like that.
Okay.
That's the answer to your question. There isn't one. Now, there is a backup system you're aware of probably called Time Machine.
Right.
That does version control on documents. So you can go back in time on a document and go back to previous edits, things like that. I don't use it, but it's there.
Okay.
But System Restore is more typically used to roll back a change to the operating system that you don't like. I installed this program. Everything's screwed up. Let's roll back to a previous restore point. Apple has nothing like that.
And see, that's what I'm worried about, because I've run into that situation with Windows before, where, like, I don't know, something happens in the system.
Get ready for this. Get ready for this. It doesn't even have an add remove programs. There's no program uninstaller on Apple.
Okay.
None.
Well, the reason for me buying the MacBook Pro is, one, you know, I've had an iPhone for a few years. I've had a couple generations now. I have an iPad. Have Apple TV, so I'm like well within their ecosystem.
Good.
And
that was their hope, by the way. That was their plan, their evil plan all along.
They got me, Leo.
I hooked you.
Yeah. So, and you know, and my whole family has Apple phones and stuff like that.
Here's the good news. I've been using Mac since 1984. Okay. I have never missed or felt the need for a system restore point. Uninstaller, maybe. Because, you know, traditionally in the old days with a Mac, you would just, the uninstaller was, you take the application icon, you put it in the trash. Because unlike Windows, especially in the early days, when you installed a program on the Mac, it really stuck to its application icon and nothing else.
I see.
Lately, it's become more like Windows, where stuff is installed in other places. There's startup scripts and things. And so there are third-party uninstallers. I still don't feel the need to use those. It's possible to look in. There's some well-known folders that you would look in and remove stuff to manually uninstall. The truth is, it's never come up because it's just not a problem.
Okay. All right. So that was pretty much my question.
The best thing is not to need system restore, right? The second best thing is to have system restore, but the best thing is not to have to need it. And I think Apple's attitude is, well, what, that's there's it's not possible to screw up the system. Now it is, of course, it's always possible. It's a computer, but they just don't have a standardized way of fixing it. And I don't miss it, so I think that's one of the culture clash things. You're just going to have to say, yeah, nope, they don't have it.
Okay, Leo. So just real quick, just kind of piggyback off the question. I've been looking also at the airport extremes or the airports.
Yes.
And that, if you can kind of just, that's basically what that is a Wi-Fi.
It's exactly what it is, Wi-Fi router.
Wi-Fi router. And then I see some that have like a terabyte of.
Some have storage, and I don't recommend those. It's just overpriced storage. You can have a network attached storage in other ways that is more effective and less expensive.
Good, because I'm broke.
Yeah. If you're going to get a router, Apple's routers are more expensive than other routers, but they're good. They're well made. I buy Apple routers. On the other hand, I guess the real thing is a $40 Linksys commodity router is not probably the best router.
Right.
So get a good router, and it's going to cost you more than 40 bucks. It's going to, you know, you can get a router from. There's some Asus now makes some excellent routers, but they're more like 150 bucks. They're closer to the Apple price.
Okay.
And it turns out, really, a cheap router is a pretty cheap router. It's cheap. Eventually. It's people for a reason. It's not great. Yeah, it's more expensive.
Oh, thank you so very much, Leo. You've answered all my questions. You answer all my questions as I listen to you. I listen to you on the podcast all the time.
Thank you.
This is the first time that I really have listened live just because I had a question, but
hey, I appreciate it, Brian.
I'm always listening to you on podcast. Thank you so very much.
Take care, Brian. Yeah, we do make podcasts of this show available, and I do a dozen podcasts all week long. In fact, we have more than a dozen on our podcast network. It's called Twit. I'm just going to wait till you stop laughing. It's called Twit, T-W-I-T. That stands for This Week in Tech. And if you Google Twit, it's easy to find, or go to the site twit.tv. This show's there, and all the other shows we do. And, of course, our own website, techilabs.com, has this show. YouTube video, audio, you can download it. But that's good. If you're going to miss it, it's nice to listen to your local station. Please do. Please patronize them. We love that. But if you miss a show, you don't have to worry. That's, we record them. We have the technology. Brian Irvine, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Brian.
Hello, Leo, and welcome back.
Thank you.
Leo, I am trying to capture HDTV video from my Cox cable. They're my cable supporter. DVR or a live Cox HD feed to my Mac. My question would be, what hardware and or apps would I need to properly do this? Specifically, a friend of mine will be on a Fox Sports Television pregame show.
Oh,
that's
great.
Baseball game, and I want to capture and record that.
Yeah, so here's the deal.
Or another hardware solution, smart, and what capture app might I need?
High def content is copy protected.
Yes.
HDCP.
So component and video would be needed for that?
Yeah, so you can always get it in analog by using components analog. So you can always get it that way. You can do it on a TiVo, if you had a TiVo hardware. TiVo, you need to get a cable card from Cox that you put in the TiVo. That makes the TiVo your set-top box slash DVR. And then TiVo has ways that you can get it to a Mac, extract the video to a Mac. So that's another way to go. But really, first of all, you don't have time to get a TiVo. And it's expensive because you not only have to buy the hardware, but then you have a subscription. So I would suggest getting a – really all you need is a digitizing device that will take component video out, that's analog, or composite, that's analog, and turn it into bits that you can record to the hard drive. And there are lots of companies that make these. I've used and recommend in the past and I'll tell you the problem with them. It's called the AVC, I think. It's Pinnacle Systems made them. The problem is that they're FireWire out, and USB is not quite fast enough. USB 3 might be. I don't know what the latest stuff is. Do you have a Mac or a PC?
It's a MacBook Pro. It's about a year old, so it doesn't have FireWire on
it. So it has to be
anymore.
Either Thunderbolt or USB.
Thunderbolt, yeah.
So there probably are video capture devices that use Thunderbolt. That would be the best because it wouldn't have to compress it so much. Mm-hmm. And component out is actually, even though it's analog, it's actually pretty good. It would be good enough for a DVR kind of recording. I wish they gave us access to this, but they're so paranoid about piracy that they won't. They just say, no, you know what? You can record it, but you can't get it off the recorder.
Exactly.
So that's the best way to take advantage of what we call the analog hole. That's composite or component, and you need a capture card or a capture device that will turn the component into either USB or preferably Thunderbolt. I don't know if anybody makes one. Black magic, if anybody. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. How do you feel? 8888 Ask Leo. I feel good. That's the phone number. Canopus. This is the product we used to use. I don't even know if they make it still. The ADVC. These are analog to digital video converters. ADVC. And we used the 55. We used the 110. We used the 300. Canopus was the company. I'm sure they're long gone. The problem is the copy protection. We're talking about how you get, the sports Fox Sports cast, because his buddy's going to be on it. How would you get that into a recorder so you'd have a DVD of it forever? And the problem, of course, is all high-def content is copy protected now. All HD content coming over your cable box or from a DVD or whatever you're watching is copy protected. So you have to have something that will capture it and convert it. Now, the normal way to do that uses what we call the analog hole. You get through it using component or composite outputs or S-video outputs. Those aren't as good as the all-digital HDMI, but they don't have the copy protection in most cases. And you could take that analog hole and record that using a capture device like this Canopus. There are, it turns out, some devices that ignore HDCP. Now, we've added... I think this is our label on here, this thing that says HDCP stripper. I don't think they sell it this way. It's just a capability that that this probably Chinese company of unknown origin makes a box that takes HDMI in. In theory, that'd be copy protected, but somehow outputs HDMI out to a recorder and eliminates the copy protection. So this device is illegal. There are companies that make these, and they don't bill it, by the way, as an HDCP stripper. They don't tell you that that's its capability. This is just an HDMI splitter, according to ViewHD, the company that makes it. It's the VHD 1X2MN3D. I'm sure we got it on Amazon or somewhere, and it was cheap. And frankly, we didn't know that it would have this amazing, miraculous capability. They surely did not bill it because, in fact, I'm probably getting them in trouble now. But it was just something we discovered. I would imagine there are many devices like this. And I don't know what we do with it. We certainly don't take Major League Baseball broadcasts and record them and put them on DVD and sell them on a blanket out in front of the studio. We're not doing that, are we? Oh, we do it for Apple Keynotes?
Apple TV.
Oh, yeah. So the Apple TV. So that's a good example. Apple streams its keynotes on the Apple TV. You have to have an Apple device to watch the Apple keynotes. But we would like to watch it on a non-Apple device. So what we do is we take an Apple TV, we watch the keynote, we pass the output of the Apple TV, the HDMI output, through this thing, and then into whatever we're using, and it works fine.
A video hub.
So it works fine. We're not burning DVDs and putting them on a blanket and selling them out front, though, right? Because that would be wrong. Already somebody in the chat room has put a link up. There you go. There you go, Brian. Rich in Santa Monica, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, Rich.
Enjoy the show and appreciate your knowledge.
Thank you.
I have a Dell laptop running Windows 7 Professional. And I think during one of the automatic Windows updates, a Windows icon appeared in the taskbar.
Yeah, saying, how would you like Windows 10?
Exactly. And from listening to your show, it sounds like they want me to be a beta tester, and I'm not interested in that.
No, you're not. And that's a good point. That's the Windows Insider program. And you don't need to sign up for that. What they're actually saying is when Windows 10 comes out, which will be in not very long, in 11 days, July 29th, when it comes out, if you agree in that, if you click that box and say, yes, I want the upgrade, You will get the official release version, not a beta, the official release version. In fact, it may, who we don't know, because Microsoft is very skinny on the facts here. We don't, they haven't told us, but I believe what will happen is sometime in the next week, it will start downloading. It's a 3 gigabyte download. So I'm guessing they're going to do a little bit at a time, or I think really the whole purpose of this is they know nowadays nobody's going to buy a disc. Everybody's going to want to download it. Imagine 150 million people all trying to download 3 gigabytes of data at the same time. No server could handle that. So they're staging it out, basically. So all that icon is it does two things. First, it checks your hardware to make sure it's compatible. Anything that can run Windows 7 or 8 is almost certainly compatible, but it checks, flashes the screen up very quickly in my case. Yes, you're compatible. And then it says, would you like to upgrade? And then you just say yes, and it says, fine, nothing to do. When it's ready, we'll start delivering you bits.
Well, it's asking me if I want to reserve a copy.
Yes.
Is what this one's
yes,
saying.
That's what mine does, too. That's what it is, though.
Okay.
Yeah. You're so, basically saying, yes, I want to upgrade.
But is there a way to get rid of that or to delete that?
Yeah. You don't like it? You don't want Windows 10? You don't want Windows 10? Come on.
I think I'll wait a bit.
No,
yeah.
You want it. No, come on. You want Windows 10. Come on. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on. Come on. You want Windows 10? It is a little annoying. I know.
Yeah.
Come on. No. You really want it. No. Come on. Microsoft is hugely invested in getting as many of the 150 million it's more than that. 1.5 billion. I'm sorry. I'm down. 1.5 billion Windows users upgraded as fast as possible, because then developers will develop for it. You know, it's
right.
So they're pushing harder than I've ever seen them push. And one of the things they're saying, but it's free. Come on. You want it. It's free. Come on. And they've never offered it for free. So I guess in their minds, this little invitation is a good thing. But I agree with you. It's extremely annoying. It is possible to uninstall it, to get rid of it. It's a hot fix that downloaded with part of the Windows updates. And you can uninstall. You got a pencil?
Yeah. Well, you know, I went to the uninstall, but it's not installed.
No. It's a hot fix. You have to uninstall. It's KB3035583.
Okay.
And it's uninstallable. Actually, all you have to do is Google uninstall Windows 10 upgrade offer, something like that.
Okay.
Or you can go to Microsoft's support document, which has also got that same number, KB3035583, and you'll see this update installs get Windows 10 app and Windows 8 1 and Windows 7, how to obtain it, update information, but also how to remove it. And this is what you want to do.
Right.
And then you won't get that little notice. You have a year to decide, so if 6 months from now you say, you know, I would like Windows 10, you can get it, and it's not a big deal. This invitation thing, it reminds me a little bit of Apple pushing a U2 album on us, right?
Apple
said, but it's a free album. Why wouldn't you want it? Windows 10, it's free. But it's a little annoying. I don't want it. I don't want to see an announcement, and I don't want you sitting there in my tray. The other thing you could do is you can hide anything in your system tray. Just right-click on it and say hide. But it'll still be there. So if it really bugs you, that's what you need to uninstall.
You know, I don't think I recall. I left and right-clicked on it to see if there was just something to delete it or anything, but I don't think it gave me the option to hide it.
Yeah, you can. I've done it. You can even drag it. So you know in your system tray you have some icons, and then there's more hidden in a little folder. You can just drag it to that folder. Then you won't see it.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, it's hiding it doesn't mean hiding it everywhere. It's just hiding it off that
No, I'm tray. Sure the next update it'll probably refresh itself.
Oh,
be right back
there. Their chutzpah knows no bounds.
Exactly, yeah.
No, come on, but don't you want it? No, you want it. I know you want it. Come on. It's Windows 10. It's free. Why wouldn't you want it? Come on. They're almost pleading with us. Anyway, that's how you get rid of it. We'll put this in the show notes, techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Here he is, the giz whiz, Dick DiBartolo. He's Mad Magazine's maddest writer.
Yes.
Part of the usual gang of idiots.
Yes.
But he joins us and puts on his smart cap each week to share a gadget or a gizmo with us. Hello, Dickie D.
Hello, Leo. So I thought I would start with a question for you.
Oh, okay.
Being gone for like almost 3 weeks, whatever it was, and being on planes, in hotels, on boats, did you see any gadget that you thought I should get that? Or did you see? Oh, none. Okay. Or did you see any gadgets at which you said, are those people crazy?
Yeah, I saw a lot of selfie sticks, like more than one would even imagine. And then the other thing that really surprised me, lots of people use their tablet as a camera. iPads, Samsungs.
Yes.
They don't bring cameras. They use their tablets. A lot of people.
I know. But the problem is now it blocks a lot of other people. Yes.
But I realize why they like it, because it was mostly older people, you know, cruise ships, river cruise especially. An older crowd. I think they like it because it's a big viewfinder. You can really see what you're taking a picture of.
Yeah.
And
also, it's a touch harder to accidentally hit a menu icon where suddenly it puts the camera in some bizarre program.
Oh, there was one lovely lady, Catherine, I just adore her, who at least four times in the cruise came over and said, could you help me? I don't know what's going on with my camera. And I would say, oh, yeah, okay, well, you do this. And exactly that. There's buttons. In fact, that even happened. I'm walking down the street. A tourist comes up to me. I must look like the tech guy.
You do? She says, Leo.
This
Larry
thing has
LaPorte
been on here. Yeah. It's on here for like the whole trip. Can you fix this? And I said, you got to just touch that. And then it goes away.
Yeah.
Oh.
You are like a miracle man.
Oh. I know. Yeah. It makes me feel smart. It's just silly little things. But they make it very easy to accidentally hit buttons on cameras.
No, they do.
It's crazy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm gonna tell you about a gadget that is certainly the wildest gadget of the year, and you should have one because you're in Sonoma County.
All right.
So Dennis and I go to this holiday in July event of gift ideas for the holidays, and we walk by, and this very nice lady has all these pocketbooks, and you know, I said, you know, we're looking for tech. We keep on walking, and we find a couple things, and then on the way out, I said to Dennis, let's just go reverse back on in case we missed anything. And as we're going back, Dennis said, that lady with the pocketbooks is pouring wine out of the side. And I said, what? He said, look, go over. Leo, she has invented, it's called VivaGenz, VivaGenz.
What is it's wine bag purse?
It's a pocketbook.
Yeah.
With a 3 liter.
3 liters?
And under a very pretty flap that lifts up is a spout. So that you can. I said to her, how did you come up with this? And she said, well, it started out with going on trips with my kids and carrying little boxes of juice and everything. And I thought, if I had a pocketbook with a big bladder in it, and then she said, if I made a slightly bigger pocketbook, I could put a bladder in it and ice packs.
Oh, my goodness.
And then a spout on the side. And then she said, wait a minute. When I'm not with the kids.
But wait, there's
wine.
More.
Wine. Wine would be good.
Oh, Lord.
And then her husband said, you know, can you do like a manly pack?
Oh, man.
So she does the man pack.
Wow.
That's also looks like a shoulder bag. It's like canvas and leather. But under the flap is a little spigot where you can serve wine. Or whatever drink you put
on
the go.
Bladder. Well, we could have used those on some of the tours. I think that was
great. Yeah. Well, I was thinking when you go to a wine tasting, you just... As people leave, you just take all the empty all the
put
glasses
in their purse. Lady, why are you pouring wine in your purse? Oh no, it's okay. It's designed.
It's okay
to do
it's
that.
Okay. It's
holy
yes, exactly.
Camoli.
Is that a Ryan?
What's the name of it again?
VivaGenz. It's if you go to gizwiz.biz and click on the tech guy, you'll see a picture of one of them.
Can you buy them now? I mean, is there a
yes,
real
yes? She's selling them at boutiques. They're $50.
Oh, it's
there's
cute.
One right.
It's
yeah,
cute.
Yeah. They're very nicely designed, and
they're sassy and classy.
Yes, exactly. Not unlike the woman herself. She was very funny.
VivaGenz.
Yes,
Viva and their wine purse.
Right. Isn't that a riot?
Not sure it's a good idea.
There's demand pack there. So there you go.
That's somebody really has a, you know, problem, I think. I can't go 5 minutes without a glass of
gadgets. I don't make judgments.
All right. You're right. You're right. I shouldn't be judging. I will judge the GizWiz website. A++, GizWiz.biz, GIZWIZ.biz. That's where you can find out about Dick's show. The GizWiz helps support it at Patreon. You can also see great gadgets, mad memorabilia, GizWiz garbage, and a whole lot more. And don't forget the What the Heck Is It contest, a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. All you have to do is identify. Oh, it's a new one.
It's a new one.
Oh. I don't know.
Did you guess the old one? I can't remember.
I did not. What was the old one?
Just scroll down and tell me what you think it is.
It looks like some sort of, I don't know, lint remover.
Okay, it's actually very clever. Only two people got it, and 26 people got the crazy answers that we gave Mads for. It actually, every one of those little pins is spring-loaded, and it's a way to gain traction if you have to turn, like, knobs on a stove
or
a lock on a door.
Yeah.
And you have limited motion.
That makes sense. You just press that on there.
It. Yeah, and then you have a big handle in the back.
It's like a door wrench.
Yeah, exactly.
A knob wrench.
Exactly.
That's really cool. And you can get on Amazon. That's really cool. See, if you'd shown that angle, I still wouldn't have known.
Okay.
GizWiz.biz. Play the game. Win the Mads. Talk to Dick. Thank you, Dickie D.
Yes, sir.
We'll see you again soon. Don't forget his GizWiz, fabulous GizWiz podcast at GizWiz.tv. Now I'm in a difficult crux. There's 79 seconds left in the show. I'm tempted to take a call, but I don't think I could answer the question in 79 seconds. And even now, it's 69 seconds, because as I continue to waffle, the clock continues to tick. I don't know what I should do. Heather Hammond, do you have any suggestions? What would Deanie Dell do?
I feel like you could help Benny really quickly.
I can't. There's only 53 seconds.
He just wants to
All right, Benny. Benny, what do you need to know? 50.
Leo, just tell me yes or no.
Yes.
Laptop, Windows 7 Pro.
Yep.
Two hard drives.
Yep.
Solid state drive.
Good.
Two gigs each.
Yep.
Office 2013 and 2010.
Yeah.
Adobe Photoshop CS6.
Yeah.
Dell Studio or an XPS. JBL Sound System 17.
I love my Dell Studio. It was a great laptop. The XPSs are great, too. Highly recommend. So you're asking me whether Dell's a good company?
Well, $500, is that a good deal?
Yeah, heck yeah. Are you kidding?
Really?
People's expectation has really dropped. It used to be the laptop you wanted was $2,500. The fact that you can get anything, and that sounds pretty good, for $500 blows my mind. All right. Yes, Benny, yes. That's it. I'm out. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.